Thanks for joining us for another episode of Fireside Chicago. Much appreciated. We appreciate all the support that we can get. If you haven't already, check us out on Instagram, Twitter, at Fireside Chicago for past clips of previous shows, updates on future guests and current guests, and anything going on with the Fireside Chicago team. I'm your host, Tim Shum. I'm also the founder and president of Lucas James Talent Partners. I get asked a lot, what is Lucas James Talent Partners? Well, I will explain it kind of in detail for the first time. So we're a recruiting firm here in Chicago. If you think of or have worked with a recruiter before as a company, typically you get charged 20, 25, 30% of first year salary. The way that we're set up, we're an alternative to that. So we got a team of senior level, mid-level, and junior recruiters. Our clients hire us on an hourly or weekly or monthly fee basis to act as their talent acquisition department or an extension of an existing team. So we come in when companies are doing a lot of hiring. So think of a Series A or a Series B or a Series C where companies are hiring 20 to 200 people at any given time. So our team can come in, do a bunch of the hiring stuff, take a lot of the bandwidth back onto the founders and the executive teams. And then in a flexible scenario, we can scale up, scale down, and turn on and turn off for our customers. So that's kind of where we play, where I play, and our team plays. Shout out to the Lucas James Talent Partners team. Today we have Pete Wilkins. Pete is the managing director of Hyde Park Angels. Hyde Park Angels, HPA, aka HPA, is an angel investment group here in town that invests not only in Chicago, but across the Midwest. I can't think of, just being in the scene for as long as I have, call it the past 5 or 6 years, a more well-established, well-respected group, not only from the founders and some of the companies that are part of the HPA portfolio, but also the other venture capital firms in town on the coast. Pete and the rest of the team have great relationships and have become a staple in the Chicago tech ecosystem. So we're going to get into the Chicago tech scene, investment fundraising cycle, Chicago versus the coast. And then Pete himself has just a really, really, really strong background, dates post-college and post-university into the tech community, worked his way up to a CEO at tech companies, private equity-backed companies, and just builds a wealth of experience that helps out all the portfolio companies of HPA. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk soon. Pete Wilkins, thanks so much for joining us today. Much appreciated.
You know, Tim, I have been thinking about this all day long. It's the highlight of maybe the highlight of my month or the year. Hope, you know what, we'll make it the year because we just started the year. So Tim, this is awesome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, that is so touching and I really appreciate it. And I've been looking forward to this. We got to know each other over the last year. I've learned a little bit more about your group, Hyde Park Angels, your background, your position within the tech ecosystem. I thought it was natural that you joined the show given the topics that we discussed on Fireside Chicago. For folks that don't know Pete, why don't you just give a quick background on yourself and how you got to Hyde Park Angels?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, what I do now, I'm the managing director of HPA, one of the most active early stage investors in the Midwest. We invest primarily in all the states that surround Chicago, and we invest across categories. I got into it probably over a decade now, early on when it was just starting. And, you know, coming off of my career as an operator, I've been in three different startups, one successful or two successful, one failed. Had the good fortune to have a couple, one company that actually was, we exited for a couple of billion, and then another company that we went public. But like all good things, there was a bubble after that. It got bought by a telecom. Functionally, my background, you know, I kind of came up in sales and marketing. So that is, I have a lot of depth in that area. Ended up running a company for a private equity firm called KKR, turned that business around, and was excited to have that experience. And so I kind of straddled, that's the word I'm looking for. I'll harness power and purpose and all that later. But you know, I really kind of straddled operator, also getting experience with private equity and being an active investor as an angel before I stepped into the group and then stepping into the role of leading the group. So, Tim, I could probably give you a little more context, but I'll pause there for you to
That's
kind
good.
Of give you some stuff that might be interesting.
That's good. I think, you know, when we spoke last, I mean, Pete, you have a lot of experience in tech, fast-growing companies, sales, marketing, running them as the CEO. And then what year was it that Hyde Park Angels had started?
Oh, that's a great, you know, I'm horrible, but ish. I do have a hand. No, I'm giving it to you right now. I got it. It was in 2010.
Okay, 2010. And the reason I bring that up
I'm bad. My bad. Actually, that was when we started putting 2007. That's right. I thought it was 13 years. So, yeah.
2007. So, like, you know, the ecosystem, the tech community has changed very dramatically, I would say, over the past 13 years. What was angel investing like? What was the tech community like here in Chicago or otherwise, like right when you started? What was that like?
Wow, that is loaded question. But I would say it was, you know, I had the experience to be in the Valley, like when everything was crazy in the dot-com era, as they call it now. So if you looked at what was going on in Chicago then, it was kind of pocket innovation. And you had, you know, some players in market that certainly were driving innovation. And for all, you know, the old timers out there, you know, there's Divine Interventures or whatever the heck Flip Bukowski called his firm. And you had, you know, some of the evangelists that came out of apartments.com and cars.com. And, you know, there was a pretty good bubbling across America. I think we represented probably equally to many other cities outside of the Valley. But, you know, having experience in both San Diego and in Silicon Valley specifically, you know, just outside of the Bay, a couple of companies I was a part of, it was so different in where the capital was coming in, the amount of activity, the perception of what venture was. It was almost a little bit frowned upon. And the evolution from then, which was concentrated, probably the easiest way to look at it, to where now I think it's flourishing. And I kind of have a point of view on how ecosystems flourish and why they flourish. And I think Chicago tells that story really well. So I don't know, that's probably a little bit of a ramble, but gives you some context, concentrated to where I think now we definitely have kind of an ecosystem that is operating on multiple fronts.
So you fast forward 13 years, a lot's kind of changed in Chicago and on the coasts and the different technologies that are out there. I've been to a few meetings, I've been super impressed, but what is HPA today? Members, investments that you do, maybe talk about current state of the group.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So I think that, you know, first, we are regularly rated as one of the most active early stage investors in Chicago by PitchBook and other sources. And our overall portfolio is just over 55 companies. We have a unique model. And I think that that's where we're built around a people first approach. You know, philosophically, I believe, you know, human capital maximizes financial capital. So how do you take people that have had experience in their professional career, either starting, scaling, and eventually selling their companies or being at the helm of a growing company? You know, if you kind of really get in and look at that experience, it does two things. It helps us, number one, determine if we have insights into where we're investing. And then post-investment, we can really align our industry expert to help that company grow. So I say, we got to make sure that we understand the value we can create when we source. And then we have to build the system to support that company as it grows. And so out of our 55 portfolio companies, about 40 of our investor members serve as what we call our deal lead. So think of it like a venture partner. Mm-hmm. And about 60% of those folks will sit in the boardroom as a board member or board observer. And the reason I kind of double click on that comment is we're not always the biggest check in the round, but often we probably bring the most expertise because we can fundamentally pull from a host of different folks that most firms our size might have 5 or 6 that are full-time staff. If you look at it, we have 5 full-time staff, about 40 folks that are representing 55 portfolio companies as deal leads. And then we have the depth and breadth of about 150 member partners that can operate in a very unified fashion behind that deal lead to the company. So we make it simple for the entrepreneur. We bring the depth and breadth of a ton of expertise. We have criteria to make sure not only are we investing as a group, but we're being good stewards in the community. We're being good leaders outside of our investments, and fundamentally making sure everybody contributes in the group so that we're successful as investors and we're successful in systematizing a go-to-market approach with our overall support post-investment. And so I've been doing this as the managing director with this whole idea, people first, human capital maximizes financial capital. And I always felt coming from an operating background is I love venture investors and I've learned so much from these guys. But fundamentally, operators are the ones that are moving the levers. You know, ultimately, they have their hands on the wheel of where everything is going. And the more we can help them through our organization, the better off we're going to be. So what we've seen, though, is not only are we the most active investor, but if you start looking at our investment compared and what we refer to our cohorts, and we compare that to funds, we're in the top decile in performance. So I can validate we do what we do well anecdotally. But if you're going to look at our portfolio and how those are industry leaders and you take a look at how our cohorts perform to funds, that would also demonstrate that this model is working in a wonderful fashion. And it's all behind people like you, for that matter.
I've been super impressed with the group. And I've learned a lot about venture investing, angel investing, how financial services works for these growing technology companies. And it's still to me, and I got to imagine even 15 years ago was a lot different, still kind of like fragmented and lack of education out there for everybody, even some of the accredited investors. You have so many different forms of capital as a founder, right? You have friends and family, you could have your own savings, you have banking relationships, typically a bank will talk to you unless there's revenue. You have these almost like payday, like loan that are high interest rate type options. There's venture capital firms, there's private equity, and then there's angel investors. Where do angel investors fit in this whole landscape of ways to finance your company? How would you categorize that to a layman?
It gets a little bit complicated, but we'll start as a layman. What I would say is a fund writes a check, a venture capital firm, which operates a fund. You have the managing director writing a check on behalf of other investors that they've aggregated their money. So they write a check and make the decision on behalf of others. Angels write their own checks. That is probably the easiest way to look at it. Now, there has been a spectrum of angel investors going from true angels, like I am an angel, Mr. or Mrs. Entrepreneur. Here is my money. I hope you do well. There's not a lot of them, but there's people that operate as an angel. There's an evolution of folks that might have an understanding of a specific area, and they want to invest because they believe there's outsized opportunity or outsized interest to them. And you'll start to see pockets of people that will fall into like an angel category in that regard. Then you'll see an evolution of those type of folks that might get to know each other and they'll create a group. And that group will pull their money together and they will operate in a host of different ways of how they will invest. And some of those can be very sophisticated. Some of those can be very ad hoc. And I think HPA, we kind of are in the position where we're closer to how an institution runs, but we provide the autonomy for individuals, investors to make their decisions. But the way that we write checks and how we are fundamentally kind of operate will be as simple as working with a fund, one check, one lead, one liaison that kind of operates it. So there's a pretty wide spectrum of what that looks like. Did that kind of hit on that?
Totally. Yeah. I think it's interesting because like if there's folks out there that are used to like the stock market or bonds or, you know, just keeping their money in a checking account and saying, oh, I've heard the term angel investor before. I've heard success stories within it. How do I kind of get started? It is still, you know, kind of the landscape's forming over time where it's like, okay, what do I do? Like, do I listen to podcasts? Do I, you know, who do I talk to? Do I join a group? How good is that group versus Pete's group? Like, you know, it's still, I believe it's kind of forming because I've showed up to your meetings before and I'm like, wow. You know, you look around, there's like current CEOs, former CEOs, folks with multiple exits, like subject matter experts in like super specific industries. Like they've been in this space doing this for a while, like coming up with a lot of these methodologies over time. It's not just a group of people that, you know, are willy-nilly trying to back some tech companies and get in early just to say that they're an angel investor. But there is a huge spectrum to date of those folks. So kudos to you for the group that you've developed. And, you know, I think turning this into a question, from when you started this thing or when you took over as managing director, let's say, even like 10 years ago, what are some of the things that you've done in order to position the group for the benefit of either entrepreneurs, group members, or maybe some of like partners, like other funds that you've built relationships with over time?
So I think you simplify it. And I think that the simplification comes around is, you know, fundamentally, how do you create value for the entrepreneur? And so there's two forms in the simplest way, financial capital and human capital. And so the first thing you got to do, or we focused on, is you got to make the process of getting the financial capital transparent. So there's clarity of the steps that you're taking. Transparent doesn't mean I'm going to give you every insight of how I made my decision. I want to be articulate to that and be thoughtful to make sure that if I do pass, that you get information that will help you grow your business. But really clear in how you go from engagement to investment or a pass. The human capital element is every engagement that I am having with the entrepreneur, I am thinking about what do we add to them to help them be successful, which is a spectrum. And my belief is that if I create value for them, they will want to have us help them create more value for us as investors. So I kind of look at it as a giver's mentality. And I know there's books about this, but and that's not how I started. But like, if I create value for you and we align our interests and I am very thoughtful of how people can help, then I'm going to move the needle. Now, I'm going to tell you one of the big things that you see a lot of groups or incubators or accelerators or whatever mentoring element, people are not created equal in a sense that they are in the appropriate position to create value. And I want to make sure that I say this, all people are equal of our rights as a human. I believe in that firmly, but not everybody has the same level of knowledge that they can provide to an entrepreneur to create value. And that can be a range of domain expertise, diversity of thought, experience, connections, access, et cetera. And so what differentiates HPA is the fundamental element is creating value with human capital. So you have to have a system to manage human capital. And where you start, and I would encourage any organization operationally or from an investment perspective, is you have to set expectations. And one of the things that almost no one does in the angel community, and I would actually argue in many things, is there's an evaluation process within HPA where we scorecard performance based on leadership participation and investment activity. And there is expectations to be a contributor in a way that fundamentally shows that you're creating value. And even though we have CEOs and successful serial entrepreneurs, what you will find is that people that perform want to be around other people that perform, and setting expectations for excellence will allow people to create a culture of excellence. And what you also need to do is be thoughtful of those people that don't perform, that they don't have an opportunity to continue their engagement within the group or within your business. And so if you know where value is being created, and you create a framework of how you evaluate value creation, and you create a system that is fair, and you create discipline in rewarding success, as well as making the hard decision not to continue and basically terminating those that aren't contributing, you will create a culture that will be fundamentally oriented in creating value for the entrepreneur. And from that, you create a state of mind that will help people drive performance, because it's built around value creation. And then at the end of the day, the entrepreneur is creating value for whoever they're creating their business for. So I think it is philosophically and systematically organized to really create a way to create outsized performance with your dollars by doing the right things with your mind and heart.
There's a lot of little nuggets in there, whether you're a founder, you run a nonprofit, you run an investment group, and you're right. Like, I don't know, I'm 3 years into a business and I'm a huge proponent for advice and mentorship, but you gotta like either know my space or have built something similar to mine for me to kind of go, yeah, like I have takeaways that I'm going to implement from there. And you're right. Like, there's a lot of coaches out there. There's a lot of boot camps. There's a lot of blah, 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 you know, all this stuff. There's people like painting themselves as gurus. But it, yeah, if your organization is saying we only bring in folks that could provide that value and they have to perform while they're here over a longer period of time, you're going to see a lot of success. There's a lot of takeaways. You're right. Outside of just in an angel investment group.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where it comes, like, diversity of thought is critical to make good decisions. And, you know, I think there's evidence, and that's where it's unfortunate that we don't have diversity in a lot of ways of experience and ethnicity and gender, because you have a different perspective, and I think that's critical. But you also need to infuse experience, industry knowledge, functional expertise, perspective. And what we are capable of doing, and I really encourage, it's a mix of all of those things, because like you definitely need a domain expert in your business to provide context. And what I often say is, I'm not going to tell you the right decision, even if I have domain experience, but I'm probably going to tell you three areas not to do it. So I'm going to be better at eliminating bad decisions and help you focus on the three paths that you can make a decision. But I think that the other thing, if you have that core person, then you might have a functional expert that knows scale. So they say, this is what you got to do from a CTO perspective. And you might have a consultant that has overseen the industry, and they will provide, this is what a go-to-market plan over years. And these different perspectives start to create a framework that you make a better decision. And so it champions my thinking, it champions the thinking of diversity and being an inclusive environment in organizations, because fundamentally, you will do better. And I think what I often say is, if you look at that, that is my fundamental philosophy. That is measured out in our investment performance as a result. And I think that that becomes really powerful to think about.
Information capital is huge. And I would argue at the earlier stages, you're making a lot of critical decisions in a very like high frequency over time. And just having a conversation or access to somebody with whatever it is, functional expertise, domain expertise, to just say, hey, I would hesitate going this direction, going right. Why don't you go left here? And here's why. All right, cool. On to the next. And like all those little transactions and all those little decisions kind of add up over time. And you fast forward 5 years, boom, there's growth, there's investment returns, all that stuff. I think it makes a ton of sense. But from your lens, doing this for as long as you've had a number of cohorts. So you've seen, I'm using quotes for the podcast, like cycles of companies, like starting, growing, maybe selling. What are some characteristics? Like what do you look for in evaluating a company, idea, person, founding team, market stuff? Like, what are some criteria that you learn to look for without giving away any proprietary secrets?
I don't know if I'm smart enough to give proprietary secrets away. Oh, I don't know if we have them, but I think, Tim, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to give you all what the VC, like the standard answers, like addressable market. And,
sure.
You know, I think that you've had enough people that probably provide really good perspective on that. What I would say that is critical, or what I look at, is I want to understand the power user. I don't care if it's a B2C, a B2B, a B2B to B2C, whatever letters you want to throw in there. I need to understand, why will somebody use the product in the way you think they should be using it at the frequency you need them to use it to show that they are using it to improve whatever they are doing in a recurring fashion. And the more I understand who that is, what they're doing, when they're doing it, and most importantly, why they're doing it, the more I can start to look at, I see the value that your business is creating. And then I start working backwards to say, what is the friction to get somebody like this person through your customer journey to be this power user? How many people do you think will do that if you do it effectively with a go-to-market strategy? Once you have a beachhead in a specific area, how tangential can you add additional people to that market? Are you more effectively adding to that core user group by getting new users that are tangentially connected versus going deep in one category because there's diminishing returns? So as soon as I understand an early stage business, what is the value that's being created to the power user to see that they change behavior, I can start running backwards and forwards where they've been and where they can go. And so that is, it's simple. It's to me is this customer journey. And I think that you're seeing in the millennial and the whole community, like it's all data driven. I think some people are misguided because they don't understand all the data, but like you can measure all this. If you go back when I was in school, like you had to project the idea of how this gets woven together. And so like now, like you have some serious power, but it all goes back to value creation with your power user. And once I understand that, then you're just handicapping your ability to predict the future that they can change behavior.
It's been, once I've started like understanding the space more, maybe making some investments myself, like looking at things through a different lens, there's so much out there. There's so many products and services. Running my business, I get cold called all the time, cold emailed, LinkedIn, all that stuff. And, you know, just taking out your iPhone or your Android and surfing the internet or social media, there's all these products and services that are at your fingertips. And when I really, really, really think about it, the buying decisions that I make are like super specific to me, my needs or wants at that given time. And it has to make like crystal clear sense for me to move forward with a purchasing decision. And then there's all this other noise that's kind of out there. So when you're starting a business if you're backing someone that's starting a business, that fit has to be like spot on. And you're right, you need to like fully understand it. And if you don't, you're going in a little bit blind.
And so there, like what I provided to you, if you give me all of your standard criteria that falls into the metric dashboard of many venture capitalists of how they might be evaluating all the critical components that they've learned over time are important, I would argue that if you can really understand the value created to the power user and you run that through that whole mechanism, like it becomes something that provides you some unique insights. And the other thing that I'll just touch on briefly too, like the idea people will change their behavior because you have something new is really critical to understand because it's faster or cheaper or better or funnier or bigger or smaller or shinier. Like it, all of those attributes to get somebody to do something different than what they've done is enormously difficult. And it could be because of who influences that decision or how they use it. But like behavior change is fundamentally what you're trying to convince me that you can do with whatever service you're going to provide. And I think that that's another way to look at that from that perspective.
Howard Tubman was on a few months ago and we were talking about, you know, just what are the opportunities out there? And he made a really good point after thinking about it, like, hey, SaaS has been around for a while. Like the iPhone's been around for a while. If you're just like a little bit more convenient than what's out there, it's probably not enough to make that behavior change. Like stuff's pretty convenient right now, like for the average person. So coming up with an idea that really, really, really makes that behavior change, you're right, it's hard. And it might be like a really tough, like technical problem to solve. You might have to really, really be thinking outside the box. And it's getting harder and harder with just like tacking on some of these applications that are out there. With Pete, with the time that we have left, out of all the folks that I've met, you're definitely at the upper echelon of like pro Chicago tech. If you don't follow Pete on LinkedIn, do so. He's got a lot of good pieces that come out around Chicago and technology and investing for via Forbes as a contributor. We talked about Chicago 2007, you know, when your angel group had kind of started, you took over the helm. What does Chicago look like today, and what gets you excited about the ecosystem that we have here?
Well, let me make sure I didn't take over HPA in 2007. That's when it started. I've been doing it going on 7 years. So number one, clear. And then the other thing, I'm gonna give myself a plug, go to petewilkins.me. And I aggregate all of my articles about venture as well as human capital and financial capital. So if you wanted me to really hit on that point really quick, Tim, what do I think Chicago is doing differently? Is that what you want me to make sure I plug?
What does the ecosystem look like today? I think there's a lot of positives that have happened with whether it be exits or the evolution of the ecosystem. What gets you excited about Chicago as an ecosystem?
Well, I think that people don't understand how powerful the ecosystem is because we have the wrong stories about what's going on in other markets that are just like ours. And so what happens is we don't have the narrative of what success truly is. And if you're looking at investments, if you're looking at industry leaders, if you're looking at categories, Chicago is among the top in every category. One of the things that, for those that are listening, if you compare New York to the Valley, if you compare Austin to the Valley, if you compare the Pacific Northwest to the Valley, they are small players. Just like Chicago, people think is a small player. But if you add New York, Northwest, Texas, everybody else, we're 50% of what goes on in the Valley. So people are distorted of what's going on. What Chicago does really well is the cross sector. So if you look at Industry 4.0, like we are a leader in that, you see a lot of activity coming out. I'll give a tip of the hat to MHUB. If you look at artificial intelligence enabled life sciences, which I am super stoked about, like we are super strong in life sciences. We're super strong in data and big data. We're super strong at figuring out how to apply the two. That is going to be, I predict, one of the hottest spots in our overall ecosystem in the future. If you look at the future of quantum computing and our ability to fundamentally get the government, academic, private, coalition around how do we actually transform what we can do and what can be done, we're a leader in that category. If you go to marketplaces, which started with Groupon and range from all of the leaders that we have a litany of those that are successful, super strong. If you look at our overall proliferation in CPG, and the innovation that's being driven out of there. So if it's Simple Mills or RX Bar or Factor or any of the type of innovation that touches on that, or if you look at logistics, if you look at Coyote or if you look at Forkites or P44 or a host of others, and you could even probably throw in ShopRunner, which got bought by FedEx. Like, we are strong in so many categories. And we're getting stronger even in consumers. So a little shout out to Cameo and another shout out to Songfinch, which is being driven by Scott Catoon from Technori. I mean, like, we got all kinds of innovation. And so, like, we are really strong in many of those categories that I led with, but we are in the top five in almost everything. So I'm very bullish. If you look at the data, it's there. We just don't tell the right story enough.
I love it. Well said. And then shout out to Songfinch. I got a Songfinch 3 years ago. It was a great experience. Songfinch, for everybody, is a, you can have like an actual like good musician write a song for you in a very quick turnaround time for birthdays or weddings or special occasions, anniversaries, all that kind of stuff. Anyhow, Pete, always enjoy the conversation. Consider you an HPA staple in Chicago. This is a very pro Chicago show. I think you finished it great. For folks that are interested in learning about you or HPA, where can they find you?
Go to PeteWilkins.me. And if you want to check out HPA, go to HydeParkAngels.com.
Thanks so much, Pete. We'll talk soon.
All right. Be well. We'll see you later.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to my chat with Pete Wilkins. Check out HPA if you're interested. Make sure to connect with Pete on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out. If you're a founder looking to raise capital, if you're an investor that's looking to get into the tech scene, make sure you reach out to Pete. Really enjoyed that conversation there. Again, we are on Instagram. We're on Twitter. Follow the Fireside Chicago LinkedIn page for any updates on future shows. We're going to be hitting one new guest per week into the future, maybe sans holidays. Thanks again for joining and all the support. Take care.